Welcome back to State of the Bay. I'm Grace Wan. The race for San Francisco mayor is a crowded one. And here on State of the Bay, we're talking to some of the leading candidates to air out their positions and to give you a chance to ask your questions. Earlier this month, we spoke to candidates Mark Farrell and Supervisor Asha Safai. If you missed it, go to the State of the Bay page on KALW.org. Later this hour, we'll be joined by Mayor London Breed, who is seeking re-election. But first, in this studio, we have Board President and District 3 Supervisor Aaron Peskin, who announced his candidacy for mayor earlier this month. Welcome to State of the Bay, President Peskin.
Thanks so much for having me.
And before we jump into it, I wanted to give our listeners a shout out so they can be part of the conversation. What would you like to ask Aaron Peskin about his candidacy and his work on the Board of Supervisors? What are the main issues you'll be voting on when you go to the polls in November? Give us a call. We're at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Or find us on social media or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. Well, again, Board President Peskin, we're delighted that you're here, and you've been involved in San Francisco politics for a long time. You were first elected to the board in 2000, and now you're serving your fifth non-consecutive term, so you've spent some time out of office. And as the current board president, you've been elected to that position twice. So given all that you've done for the city, why are you – okay, you're saying three times. Why are you choosing to run for mayor now?
Well, I think San Francisco has a number of challenges, and I think the quarter of a century on and off that I've had in public life, learning every aspect of public policy, working consensually with my colleagues on the Board of Supervisors, having experienced a number of different mayoral administrations, really have given me the tools that I need to run the city. And look, I think the number one issue for all of us is housing, particularly affordable housing, and I'm in it to fix it. And I think there are a number of exciting opportunities. And even in an economic downturn, there are opportunities to convert vacant offices downtown that actually the mayor and I have teamed up on. And there are opportunities that the government has actually missed. Tomorrow, I will be announcing legislation to get the city and county of San Francisco, with its financing might, its ability to access tax-exempt financing, to use its Office of Public Finance to provide financing for a host of projects that have been stuck in the pipeline, for downtown office to housing conversions, for the acquisition of portfolios like the Veritas portfolio that are on the market. And at the same time, I have a record of, and I want to continue championing, making sure that this is a city where tenants and property owners can age in place. And to that end, I'm very proud of legislation that we will be finally passing tomorrow on its second reading, that finally gets right not passing through general obligation bond tax increases to tenants. So that's another part of this puzzle.
Well, you mentioned financing to maybe for the city to acquire housing. I mean, the city's facing a budget deficit and its bond rating is in question on some level. So are we really in a position to do all those things?
Well, it's interesting that you raise that. I have been a champion of affordable housing bonds, and indeed was the principal force behind the March bond that we passed last month that provides $300 million for new affordable housing construction in San Francisco. The kind of bonds that I am proposing tomorrow are actually have no recourse to the city's general fund, do not impact our bond rating. These are tax-exempt bonds that the city can issue. It's a cheaper source of financing. It would be paid for through the revenue from rents. And this is really to address moderate income housing, workforce housing for our bus drivers, for our first responders, for our educators. I actually teamed up with Supervisor Sandra Feuer in 2019 to do something very similar. We put Prop E on the ballot that led to the development in the Sunset District of the Shirley Chisholm Apartments that are now built, that are now being leased out to teachers and educators. So this is a workforce housing. We've done relatively well at the lowest income brackets. The market rate units have – we produce actually 1.5 times of our state mandated goals. But it's the middle income workforce housing that really needs to be addressed.
Well, the San Francisco Chronicle had a report saying that a lot of the moderate housing that has been built just for the people that you've mentioned has sat empty. Why is that happening?
That's absolutely right. And the legislation, and it's taken us a while to figure this out, that we are introducing tomorrow, that I am introducing tomorrow, actually has provisions to streamline the moderate below market rate stock, to redesign the lottery to make it a lot easier to access this type of housing. So those are problems in the system that need to be fixed, that no one's paid attention to, and this legislation will address those fixes.
But you've been on the board off and on for the last 25 years, and you say people aren't addressing those issues. Are you referring to yourself?
We live in a very complicated world, and legislation is an evolving set of laws, and you learn things and you fix them, and you pioneer new routes and you figure out what's working and what's not working. And that is the legislative process. And that's precisely what we figured out relative to BMR, moderate workforce housing units, that there's a lot of them that are not being absorbed because of the process. I was the author of legislation to change the way we do inclusionary housing, how much on-site affordable housing a developer in a market rate project has to build. And we realized that those rates were too high in a changed market. And I introduced legislation to cut those in half. I mean, it was the pragmatic thing to do. And so legislation's an evolving field constantly.
Mm. Well, it's interesting. You're going to introduce a bond tomorrow. Today, Mayor Breed announced a $167 million bond herself. I mean, is this bond time for candidates who are running for mayor?
No, I'm not introducing a bond. I'm introducing a form of financing where the city would be the conduit financer for-profit and nonprofit developers. I'm not putting a bond on the ballot. I'm creating a new tool to unstick the housing pipeline where some 71,000 units have been fully entitled, are ready to build. But because of the interest costs, because rents are down in San Francisco, nobody is availing themselves of the current commercial lending market. It is too expensive. It doesn't pencil. This is an alternative source of financing. The mayor and the board are, as we do before every election, working to craft a general obligation bond that would require a 2/3 vote of the people, similar to the affordable housing bond that 70% of the voters embraced in March. This would be a bond for our Department of Public Health and some other departments for deferred capital maintenance needs that the city has. And that has been the subject of discussion today at the Capital Planning Committee of the city.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is State of the Bay on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW Bay Area, and I'm Grace Wan. We're having a one-on-one conversation with Board President Aaron Peskin discussing why he thinks he should be the next mayor of San Francisco. So what questions do you have for Board President Peskin, and what issues are important to you in this upcoming election? You can give us a call by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. So, President Peskin, it will come as no surprise to you that you do have a reputation of being a not-in-my-backyard kind of legislator, a NIMBY. One coalition, Grow SF, has written, "Perhaps no politician in the modern era is more responsible for the city's housing crisis than Aaron Peskin." I mean, pretty big words from them. And you've just been describing all the moderate housing that you want to build. And I guess my question to you is, where in the city is this housing going to be built? Because you just authored legislation to block high rises in and around Jackson Square. And that was going to be housing for people, but I guess not in your district.
So, Grace, my record actually speaks to over 100,000 units that I have helped authorize, from the Bayview Hunters Point Shipyard to the Eastern Neighborhoods rezoning that I led in 2007-2008, Rincon Hill, Central Soma, Western Soma, and opportunities in the northeast corner of the city, the first settled, the densest part of the second densest city in America, where we rebuilt all of the former freeway parcels into dense, affordable housing for families, for individuals. But the reality is that if we are going to develop San Francisco, we have to include the people of San Francisco in those conversations. We cannot bulldoze their voices. We have to bring them in. And what I think I've shown is that when we work consensually, we can actually come together and create community plans that honor the best of neighborhoods, that bring neighbors and everyday people to the table. And that's exactly how we rezoned the Eastern Neighborhoods. That's exactly how we rezoned Rincon Hill, the Western Soma, Central Soma. That's the kind of work that we are doing together to repurpose our downtown, to make it a vital neighborhood like many of the other incredible neighborhoods of the city. Housing has been missing from downtown. There are many opportunities to build more, to build denser in San Francisco, but we've got to honor the voices of those neighborhoods. It shouldn't be a top-down, government-imposed, our way or the highway. And I think we ultimately are going to have a lot more acceptance if we do it in a consensual way.
Well, I mean, how much voice should a resident actually have? I read a story in the Chronicle the other day about a family that's trying to renovate their home, and it's been months, if not years, for them because they keep getting complaints from other neighbors, neighbors who've in fact made their houses bigger. So exactly how much input should any resident have in growing up this city to, I mean, we're supposed to build 82,000 more homes by 2031.
Right. And by the way, going back to the building of 82,000 homes, we have 70,000 units in the pipeline. And what is missing, the secret sauce that is missing, is the financing to build them. And remember that affordability is key. 46,000 of those homes need to be affordable under the state mandates that we are facing. The market rate units, those will be built when the interest rates are right. But how we subsidize or how we creatively finance the 46,000 units that are going to be affordable to the working people that make this city run is really the city's imperative. Yes, there are processes that can and have been reformed where individuals can abuse the system. But when it comes to actually whole-scale planning, having neighborhood voices in that conversation, calling balls and strikes, having a firm hand, but bringing people together is what's going to make this thing work. And I have a record of bringing people together. I think that the yimby-nimby dynamic is a terrible dynamic. It should really be where in our backyard. Mm-hmm. How do we get it done rather than this polarization that is really helping no one?
Well, you certainly have a record as somebody who knows the planning code backwards and forwards. I mean, I've read people say it's like nobody knows planning better than Aaron Peskin. And as a deal maker, but I mean, to be – you do also have a reputation for being a little bit tough, and it's one that you've really – a reputation that you have addressed head-on yourself. And I want to ask you about that, being the leader of our city and having this background behind you, or this baggage of being kind of a toxic member of the Board of Supervisors. How will you handle that?
Well, I think people should be accountable for their behavior, and I've expressed my regret and have apologized for the tenor of that I've struck at times, and I've also changed. I also have been very public about the fact that I am in recovery, and I have said that I think this is a city that is in recovery. I'm very grateful for the recovery that I have gone through. It's given me an entirely different perspective. I cherish every day. I realize how special this city is, and I want to spread that. And I want to – that's brought a lot to my style of leadership. It's been transformational.
I want to ask, I mean, as somebody who has struggled with alcohol yourself, has that brought a different – approach or flavor to how you look at addiction? I mean, the city is suffering from a crisis across the streets and in people's homes as well, of people who are suffering from addiction, whether it's drugs or alcohol or whatnot. Has your experience inflected your approach to these policy concerns?
Listen, it has really helped me understand that there are many different solutions for different people who are at very different places in their struggles. And I hear these debates raging. Is abstinence the right way? Is harm reduction the right way? And the answer is for – and I've become much more aware of this – for different people at different places, they need different solutions. And I reject this very simplistic notion that there is one right way to do it, because it doesn't work for everybody. And that's been part of my learning experience.
Mm. Let's get on the phones. We have Tina from San Francisco who has a question for you. Tina, welcome to State of the Bay.
Thank you. Yes, I have a question. And Supervisor Peskin, I was at a Capitol Planning Committee meeting, and you did indicate support for the Holiday Plaza repair or replacement, but I understand that you're proposing that Mayor Reed's bond measure that includes that, and we've been trying for a long, long time to get that as a priority, because people who are disabled, people who are in wheelchairs, rollators, and so forth, can't have access to the plaza. So I was wondering how you stand on that and what you think the possibilities are of finally getting that elevator fixed. It has been out of order since 2001.
Wow.
Thank you for that question, Tina. And yes, I am very familiar with the Halliday Plaza elevator replacement that has been out really for 10 years. And the debate, the discussion, the evolution of a $360 million bond that is scheduled to go to the November ballot that was discussed by the Capitol Planning Committee today and will be discussed again next week and then will be taken up by the Board of Supervisors before it goes to the ballot. We have to find funding this year for that elevator replacement. I think the more controversial aspects of what you heard today was the mayor's proposal to replace funding for the rehabilitation of the city clinic that the LGBT community fundamentally relies on and has for many decades and is in need of great capital funding. That was the controversy that you heard today. I don't think there was any controversy about the $10 million that it's going to need that we need for the elevator.
Well, another issue that is kind of plaguing the city is this feeling of public safety. I mean, statistically, San Francisco is pretty safe. I mean, the murder rates are the lowest they've ever been. But of course, it's all a matter of perspective, and residents don't feel safe. I mean, what's the appropriate measure that a resident of the city should use in terms of whether this is a safe place or not?
Well, first of all, I think you just hit it, Grace, which is people need to feel safe. And part of that is a narrative that some of us perpetuate. Part of that is quality of life crimes that I've personally experienced. I had my catalytic converter stolen. I had a window broken, although there was nothing in the car. All of that, by the way, prior to the pandemic. But I think that having community policing, augmenting that with ambassadors, who many of whom are former police officers. The story that I've experienced in the northeast corner of the city that I've represented for most of the last 25 years, where we have real community policing, a lot of folks who grew up in the city, who grew up in Chinatown, who know the shop owners, who know the residents. That's what all of San Francisco deserves. I proposed earlier this month creating a schools to officers pathway where people can go to local universities and become peace officer trained as part of their curriculum. That will bring city kids, if you will, into law enforcement and guarantee them a job and not require a long, rigorous training. Instead, they would get that actually in college. That's something I've talked to USF about, and the head of USF is very interested in that and would create the pipeline that we need, because right now, and San Francisco is not unique in this way, we are down hundreds of officers. This is not an issue of money, Grace. These are fully funded vacant positions that we need to fill, and we can't go about it in a piecemeal fashion. We have to really intentionally figure out a pathway to bring officers who are part of 21st century policing. And I'm very proud of our police chief. And by the way, this mayor and this board have stuck to implementing all 272 of the Obama-era Department of Justice recommendations for police reform. And last week, we celebrated the adoption and implementation of the last of those 272 recommendations. We should all be very proud of that. But I think filling those several hundred, over 300 vacant positions is going to make San Franciscans feel safer.
Well, we have an email from a San Franciscan who writes, how do you balance the personal rights of the unhoused with the right for other citizens to feel safe? What are your guiding principles in that debate?
My guiding principles to that debate are precisely what I have done with community collaboration in the northeast corner of the city, which is shelter. We can squeeze this toothpaste tube and we can move it from one neighborhood to another. But ultimately, if you have a citywide perspective, maybe one supervisor wins temporarily, another supervisor and their constituents lose. It's fundamentally about shelter. We were able to create the first transitional age youth center shelter in a navigation center in the northeast corner of the city, where the neighbors were at the table and became supportive. We were able to open one of the largest shelters in San Francisco on Post Street, 250 units done in close collaboration with the neighbors. I am not saying it has not had its hiccups. It has had. But we continue to meet on a regular basis between the provider, the Department of Homelessness, my office, myself included, and the neighborhood. And if we do that and we create that example, we can do that in other neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. And the answer is we've got to shelter these people.
Well, I mean, you're making the northeast part of the city, Telegraph Hill, et cetera, sound idyllic.
I'm talking about all the way to Post Street and Bush Street and Sutter Street.
I mean, your district, right? District 3. I mean, what can other districts learn from the collaboration that you're talking about? You mentioned that some districts lose and some districts win. I don't think that you're saying it's a loss to have shelter.
No, I'm saying that when we play moving unsheltered people around, then we're not solving the problem. Mm. And I think we have an obligation to address the issue. Listen, New York City has capacity for 85% of their unsheltered population. San Francisco has capacity for less than half of our unsheltered population. That's something that we need to change. That is something that I intend to change.
Yeah. And so in going back to public safety, I was looking at your Twitter feed and your Chinatown is in your district and you've spoken a lot about the safety of Asian Americans and also the shopkeepers who have been victimized by retail crime and retail theft. What do we need to do to make sure that we don't live in a city or a world where every last thing is locked up on a shelf, that you walk into a store and you have to ask for help because you can't even get a canister of laundry detergent?
COVID's been tough on all of us. The aftermath of COVID certainly led to a huge increase in retail theft. The numbers are actually quite heartening now. A semblance of rationality is starting to take hold. And by the way, that also requires a criminal justice system and a law enforcement system that we are seeing the results of. There's no question about it. I get the jail reports every day. This week, for the first time in modern memory, our jail census is now over 1,200 folks. That is a reality, but it's also seeing some demonstrable changes on the street. Yes, we need to get those folks into diversion programs. Yes, those people need services. Many of them are drug addicted and they need drug addiction services. But the reality is that we need to have a robust law enforcement system, and I don't intend to get in the way of that.
Well, last question before I let you go. Do you have a ranked choice voting strategy?
I think everybody should use their votes. We are given the ability to vote for 10 different individuals. I think that we should all use our votes and we should rank those individuals. And that is the best way to be enfranchised.
So no strategy?
My strategy is to win. My strategy is to go all over this city Every corner, I love the neighborhoods of this city. I mean, I cannot tell you how much I love the corner of the city that I represent. But this last weekend, I was in the Parkside. I was in the Inner Richmond. I had a lovely set of meetings in the Excelsior. These are all remarkable, special neighborhoods. And I think that everybody who votes in the city should rank their choices for mayor. I hope they rank me first.
Well, and I can't let you go without, for my friends who are outdoor swimmers. I mean, you are a big swimmer out there at Aquatic Park, right? Is that your favorite place in the city?
It is like recovery. It is just life-changing. Everybody should try it.
Well, we have been talking to Board of Supervisors President and current mayoral candidate Aaron Peskin. Board President Peskin, thank you so much for joining us on State of the Bay.
Thanks for having me, Grace.
Yeah, see you out on the water. Coming up next, we'll talk to Mayor London Breed about why she thinks she should be reelected as San Francisco's mayor. That's right after the break. Stay with us.
On the Emergence Magazine Listening Hour, we explore the threads connecting ecology, culture, and spirituality. In our next episode, we step into the mysterious world of forests with ecologist Dr. Suzanne Simard.
The Wood Wide Web was such a revelation. It suddenly turned upside down our understanding of forests as just a collection of individuals competing with each other to this entwined, interactive, integrated whole.
Join us Mondays at 7 p.m. on KALW.
This is Suni Khalid, news editor here at KALW. In case you missed it, a Cal undergrad student was sworn in today to the Berkeley City Council. And non-citizen students of the City College of San Francisco may get to vote in elections for the Board of Trustees. You can hear these stories, as well as others from our partners at NPR, by logging onto our website at KALW.org. Meanwhile, keep your dial set on 91.7. We're KALW, San Francisco Bay Area.
Welcome back to State of the Bay. I'm Grace Wan. London Breed is the 45th mayor of San Francisco and has held that position since 2018. Raised in the Western Addition, Mayor Breed is the first African-American woman elected to the office. She previously served as supervisor representing District 5, which includes the Tenderloin, Japantown, Western Addition, and the Haight-Ashbury. We're so pleased to have her join us today on State of the Bay. Listeners, we want you to be part of this next conversation. We're going to be talking to San Francisco Mayor London Breed, who's running for re-election. What questions would you like to ask Mayor Breed about her record as mayor and her plans for a new term? And what issues are you prioritizing in the mayoral election? Give us a call. We're at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can find us on social media or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. Mayor Breed, and welcome to State of the Bay.
Thank you.
So today you announced a new bond measure, $167 million, that is addressing various needs. And I'm curious what the bond is for and why are you introducing it now?
So typically when we have an election, we introduce these kinds of bonds based on the capital plan. And there are bonds where we retire previous debt and we look at our bond rating and allow our departments to take on, or at least our city to take on, additional debt that doesn't raise taxes. And we do so responsibly and have been doing this work for over 10 years now. And we have a long-term capital plan to focus on the city's most critical needs. And we look at those needs, assess those needs, and make hard decisions about exactly where we want to make those investments. And we go to the voters, we rally at the ballot, and we try to get 2/3 vote to get it passed, similar to what we just did in March with the affordable housing bond.
Yeah, so it's going to hit the hospital, Laguna Honda, Chinatown Public Health Center. There'll be road repair. There'll be some shelters built, and Castro's Harvey Milk Plaza will be fixed. I mean, it seems like there's something for everybody. Is this just because it's an election?
Well, these are some of the projects that have been unfortunately pushed back and delayed. And more importantly, the health and safety bond, which includes a lot of the hospital related work and some of the road repair work, was already in the pipeline to get done this coming November. And so this is just, more importantly, an opportunity for us to fix many of our community assets, in particular the Chinatown Clinic was pushed, you know, 4 years down the road. It's seismically unsafe and needs to be addressed. So many people definitely agree with that. Laguna Honda, as you know, had faced a number of challenges, and we needed to make sure that we continue the great work we're doing there. We've been recertified. We've been able to save Laguna Honda, but there is some infrastructure work that needs to be done. I can go on and on, but the fact is, all of these projects represent needs in San Francisco, and there are more needs, of course,
right.
But we need 2/3 vote, and so this represents an opportunity to get more people engage in advocating for this bond to pass, because it is not easy to get 2/3 vote, you know, at the ballot box. It's hard work. It's very expensive. And we need to make sure that people are advocating to get this across the finish line.
Mayor Breed, in 2018, when you ran for mayor for the first time, you wrote in your campaign pledge, "The city of St. Francis should never let thousands of people shiver in the cold or endure illness and addiction alone on the streets, nor should the city that knows how remain unable to improve, much less solve, the most persistent problem we face. Walking the streets of San Francisco can be frightening, demoralizing, even an unhealthy experience for residents and tourists alike. A report last month declared our streets dirtier than some of the world's worst slums, and we all witnessed the smells and sights to prove it." So that was in your campaign material from 2018, and I wanted to ask, would you say that the conditions for the unhoused and the cleanliness of the streets have improved since then, and if so, in what way?
Well, a couple of things I will say. In certain neighborhoods, most neighborhoods all around San Francisco, definitely they have improved. In that recent Chronicle poll, it showed that close to 70% of residents of San Francisco thinks their neighborhoods are great and their neighborhoods are safe. And we have helped over 15,000 people who were on the streets of San Francisco, who have been homeless, get into housing, shelter, and other opportunities since I've been in office. So we have been doing the work. We still struggle because, sadly, what we're dealing with now is it isn't just about homelessness. It's about fentanyl and what impacts the fentanyl has had on people who, unfortunately, are not always from San Francisco. This is a place that we have had people who have traveled from other places because, sadly, the ease of getting access to drugs has been very much problematic. I put together a team of people. We're getting help from the feds, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the U.S. Attorney's Office, and the California Highway Patrol to help us address this issue. We've made over 3,000 arrests of both dealers and users, and the approach that we're taking to try and combat this most challenging issue is to be as aggressive as we possibly can. But this is overwhelming cities all over the country, and here in San Francisco, we're taking very decisive and aggressive action to try to combat it. But we have been working very hard to get people housed, to get people clean and sober, and to get folks the support that they need. And I am very proud that we have even instituted abstinence-based solutions in our recovery, $22 million with 7 new sites. That's not just sites for programming. That's sites for housing those who were struggling with addiction and who have an abstinence-based solution to help them address those issues. So it's a lot of work for sure, but our city has unfortunately been overwhelmed by this challenge, and we continue to do everything we can to address it.
Well, you know, we just had Board President Aaron Peskin on, and we were talking about addiction and the problems of drug use in the city. And he mentioned that, you know, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution, that abstinence may not be the one thing that works for everyone. Do you agree with that?
Well, I definitely have never said that abstinence-based solutions are the only thing that works. It isn't a one-size-fits-all. It's what works for the person, because there are different kinds of addiction challenges that people have, and there's different solutions that can hopefully address the challenges and get people on the right path of being clean and sober. But I must say, as someone who actually grew up in public housing in the crack epidemic, where we saw people who unfortunately were addicted to heroin, addicted to crack, struggled in this environment, the opportunity to get clean and sober was possible. And right now, those are some of the same people that I am working with in the recovery community to help combat what is happening with fentanyl. But fentanyl has been a lot more deadlier, a lot more problematic, and really very difficult to come back from. So it requires us focusing on being a lot more aggressive. It can't just be about treatment and programs. It has to be about making arrests, which I've made the hard decision to make arrests of those dealing and using drugs. The goal, of course, is to get treatment and with those who are dealing to hold them accountable, but also Proposition F that I put on the ballot that voters pass. This is if you want money from San Francisco and you struggle with addiction, you have to be in a treatment program. We're not saying what kind of treatment program. We're just saying that you have to be in some sort of treatment plan. And San Francisco is actually providing the resources for that treatment.
Well, you mentioned growing up in public housing and, you know, the drug crisis that you witnessed then. And now you're saying your harm reduction strategy has changed. Is that really because of fentanyl? Is that the issue that sort of shifted how you think about this?
I think that it evolved. I wouldn't say it completely changed. It evolved because of people that I grew up with who in some cases live in the Tenderloin, who have, in fact, suffered from substance use disorder. They are the ones providing, you know, the feedback to me about what we need to do, because they have not only been in it, they are actually trying to help solve it and help address it. And they have been frustrated with, you know, the city in the past and how we invest dollars into a lot of harm reduction strategies. They're not opposed to harm reduction strategies, but they think public health resources should also be invested in abstinence-based solutions as well. So that is what I decided to do, is work with this community to provide alternatives. And it again, is not a one size fits all. And our goal is to try and get people treatment as soon as we can. And that's really how we're going to help to turn this thing around. But it's not just about treatment. It's not just about, you know, a program. It's also about force. And some people will need to be arrested, and some people will need to be held accountable for selling this poison on the streets of San Francisco. We have not abandoned our values of being a city of second chances and opportunities for those who are struggling and got their life together and want a second chance. But we can't be a city where anything goes. We can't take care of the world's problems, especially because so many people are coming from everywhere to San Francisco. And the expectation is that we're providing them the support, treatment, help, telephones, needles, foil, all of the things that they need in order to be comfortable on the streets of San Francisco. And that is what we are at a point where we are stopping a lot of that by putting accountability into the conversation.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is State of the Bay on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW Bay Area, and I'm Grace Wan. We're one-on-one with Mayor London Breed, discussing how she has responded to the city's challenges and why she believes she's earned another term as mayor. This is your chance to ask Mayor Breed a question directly. So what do you want to know, and what issues are important to you in the next election? You can join us by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255, or email us at stateofthebay@kalw.org. You know, Mayor Breed, I hear you talking about the things that you have done for the city to make it safer, to help people who are addicted, to help people who are on the streets. And yet, a poll in the Chronicle in February states that more than 70% of those who responded disapprove of your performance. I mean, why do you think that is? And why should voters give you four more years?
Well, I think I can't speak for you know, the folks in the poll, but I will tell you that when I am out there talking to voters and I'm telling them about what I'm doing, I'm telling them that San Francisco has one of the lowest crime rates that it's had in 10 years, not including the pandemic. And I'm telling them about the over 15,000 people that we've helped off the streets and all of the things that we're doing. They are sometimes we're not necessarily aware of all of this work. And also there's a reality versus perception. You know, the reality is San Francisco is much safer than any other big city in the United States. The reality is when I was growing up, people were being killed on a regular basis. And now we have one of the lowest homicide rates of any major city in the country. So the reality is one thing, but if people are saying, I don't feel safe, or I am, whatever, that is the thing that we have to address. That has been the hardest thing to overcome in light of what we've seen happen in terms of San Francisco's reputation, and how viral videos that may not always even be in San Francisco, that might be in the Bay Area, or in some cases, videos that have been in other cities outside of the Bay Area, attributed to San Francisco, attributed to things that are happening here that aren't necessarily happening here. And I think, unfortunately, that the challenges that we dealt with after the pandemic and the issues that people highlighted created, this environment to a certain extent, and it's been very challenging to overcome.
Mm. Well, are you the person to help us overcome it then? Because, I mean, if there's been marketing campaigns about San Francisco's not so bad, we're actually really great, we're attracting this and that. I mean, are you the right person to be the marketing agent for San Francisco?
Oh, yes. We're already starting. We have already begun. And just to, I was just at JFK Promenade where there were so many people out. There was so much joy, excitement. I have talked to a lot of folks who have said our parks have never looked or felt better. I've met tourists and business individuals who are saying, I thought the city was one thing and it's not. And I've had to actually work with and let me just back up. San Francisco has never had to work for it. That's the difference. We have never had to work. We always had tourists. We always had business. We never had to work for it. And now we do. And that requires our city to incentivize rather than penalize. And we've penalized it before the pandemic because we made it difficult for people to do business here, to have conventions here, and to do a number of things because the city was so popular. And now we have to work for it. One of the reasons I went to China was to meet with business interests, to talk to tour operators, of course, to get pandas. But what I discovered is it's not just about San Francisco and the challenges of San Francisco. It's really about the issues that we have with flights from China to San Francisco. Our recovery is contingent upon having a solid relationship with China. And that includes tourists and business. And that has been very much problematic. It's something that we are working on. So we are trying to do everything we can to not let other people who in many cases may not even live here define us as a city, but to tell our own stories, to talk about our own experiences, and to make sure that we're, by adding nightlife, night markets, excitement, fun, entertainment, that we're a city of joy, a city of yes, a city of opportunity. So that is my goal. That is what I've been doing. And it seems to be working because things seem to be changing.
Well, we have a question from a listener who asks, how do you balance the personal rights of the unhoused with the rights for other citizens to feel safe? What are your guiding principles in this debate? And I know the city has participated in the Grants Pass case before the Supreme Court about this. But how do you come at this on this personally?
Well, I on a personal level, I believe in force. I believe that if the laws weren't so restrictive, I would force people into shelter. I would force people into treatment. I would force those who are on the streets into some sort of housing. I don't think it's, okay to just say, well, someone has rights and they should be able to live on the streets and create some of the problems that are being created, whether it's, the use of, the outdoors as public restrooms or the use of water fountains to clean themselves, especially when we have a place for them to go. When we have a place for them to go, we should be able to force them into the place that we have available for them.
Is that a shift in how you've thought about the unhoused, this idea
No.
that people need to be forced into housing and to help and to getting off of the street? You've always held that position.
I've always held that position. I am a compassionate person, and I believe in tough love, and I'm not deviated from that it's just been very difficult in light of, you know, the laws that exist that have made it very challenging. Soon as we got clarity from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeal that we could say, look, if we offer you housing, if we offer you a shelter, you are no longer involuntarily homeless. So technically, you can still turn us down, but we can clean and clear the streets and we have to bag and tag. There's a whole bag and tag policy we're required to do. But ultimately, we have been as aggressive as we can to try and get people off the streets. And it goes back to, if we have a place for you to go, I don't want you to be comfortable on the streets of San Francisco. I want you to take us up on the offer to either get you into shelter, get you into housing, or help you reconnect with your family member through our Homeward Bound program.
So I guess what I'm hearing is your solution is to either force people to go back to their homes outside of San Francisco or force them into shelter. What kind of force would be required?
Well, force meaning, you know, part of it is what we're doing, unfortunately, with people who use drugs. People who use drugs are being arrested. And we are trying to use that as an opportunity to force them into treatment. People who are dealing drugs are being arrested. We are trying to stop them from doing so and looking at possibility of something as an alternative to going back on the streets to deal drugs. But ultimately, our district attorney is making sure that based on the cases, as well as the U.S. attorney, in some cases, they are prosecuting people for these crimes. So I just think that part of the force is the law and using the law in an effective way to try and hold people accountable is something that we have been using all the tools that we have available to us to implement to address some of the challenges on the streets of San Francisco. It's led to over 3,000 arrests of those who are dealing and using drugs that have happened in less than a year.
Well, I mean, is forcing people to go into drug treatment a kind of a, I mean, you were saying that you've been talking to people who have been on the streets and who have suffered in this way, and they kind of are the experts in this matter. Is forcing people into treatment one of the things that they recommend?
Well, it's one of the things that they definitely recommend. But I also know that there, you know, are people who may not all feel that way. I mean, there are a lot of differences of opinion. I just know that what we are doing now without, if we're not using force, it's not working. And in many cases, for example, with those who are in recovery, their stories are, I was arrested, I was locked up, I got treatment, I got help. There's a lot of stories like that. I was just at an event this past weekend with people who from the reentry community, and the stories. It'd be great to have a forum to talk to some people who are part of this community to hear from them directly, and how someone who just got out of jail a couple of weeks ago basically said, London, you need to, you know, you can't just let these folks get away with this. You need to make sure that I'm just blown away over the fact he just came home and he's telling me that I'm not being aggressive enough with what's happening on the streets of San Francisco. So I do think there needs to be conversations with this community because, you know, they feel differently in many instances about what San Francisco has allowed to happen on the streets of on the streets, mostly in the Tenderloin.
Well, I wanted to switch gears a little bit. I have an email from Meg. She writes, I'm a parent of an SFUSD student, a public school teacher, and a longtime SF voter. I'm concerned because I just heard the city is cutting funding for our after-school programs. How will you ensure San Francisco students receive the consistent support they need to succeed in school, particularly in light of extreme budget constraints schools are facing? In other words, how do you rank children in how you prioritize city funds?
Well, to be clear, I've always prioritized children. And in fact, the department the budget cuts occurred, there was an assessment. They wanted to make sure that there were some systems around accountability, and they made some decisions. I'm evaluating those decisions now to understand whether or not there were organizations that were cut that we're delivering significant services that need to be have funding restored. And I also, during the pandemic, there were a lot of programs that received significant increases because of private dollars. And so those dollars are no longer available. So there's some assessment work that needs to be done in order to make sure that we are not reducing services for children in San Francisco, because that truly is something important that we need to continue. And we need to make sure that especially those organizations that are actually effective and delivering good programming for our kids, that they are not impacted. That is something I genuinely care about. And if it weren't for those programs, my first job at 14, Department of Children, Youth and Family, Mayor's Youth Employment and Training Program, like all of these programs are what, you know, helped to raise me. And so those are definitely going to be programs that I prioritize.
Well, the city is facing this state mandate to build 82,000 more homes by 2031. And you certainly have been beating the drum to build more housing within the city by, you know, scaling back how difficult it is to build. And yet we don't seem to have made much progress. And I was fascinated that the Chronicle had reported that some 80% of housing built for moderate income voters is unoccupied. So tell me, in a second term, what will be your priority when it comes to building more homes for middle class people?
Well, my housing plan is already been kickstarted. And a lot of the things that we've been putting in motion are going to hopefully lead to better results. But right now, the interest rates and the cost of construction is definitely having a real impact on housing production, which is why San Francisco has to stop saying no, stop adding layers of bureaucracy, and get to yes. You know, how do we make sure that we are removing, and I'll give you a perfect example. The state has a density bonus that they allow for developers in cities that we have no control over. We have no say. We have no ability to make any changes whatsoever. Yet we had a whole process for a state density bonus that added another close to sometimes 6 months to the process. So all of these little things, it's like death by a thousand cuts. Mm. All these little things that the city over the years have added that have made it difficult to build housing is what I'm completely removing and deconstructing as we speak. I am trying to remove aggressively all the barriers so that we don't have to go through a process to rezone a parking lot that could already be zoned so that housing could be developed within the appropriate housing limits of that area. So we're already doing the work and we're being as aggressive as possible. Others are still being very not in my backyard. And look, I know people are like, yes, in my backyard, where in my backyard, not in my backyard. Everybody has a thing, but here's the problem. This is why I'm so aggressive about housing production and will not let up on what we need to do in San Francisco. I grew up here, born and raised here, and I watched as, you know, so many people who I grew up with can no longer afford to live here. Mm-hmm. So many folks can't, like, you have a lot of folks who are older and their children live far away and they're not able to live next to their grandchildren and experience that life. And my goal with what I'm trying to do is make sure that we have an opportunity to create a better future so the next generation of San Franciscans growing up here can afford to live here. And more importantly, we have about 4,000 vacant positions in the city and county of San Francisco. When I was growing up, city jobs were everything. Hmm. And now everybody, many people who work for the city have to commute long distances. Like, we have to be aggressive in creating housing. And that means getting rid of unnecessary bureaucracy requirements, and it is going to mean rezoning parts of our city that have robust transit opportunities. There is nothing wrong with a 6, 7, 8 story building on the west side of town where it's appropriate to do so. And I am not looking to do redevelopment 2.0 and start tearing down sound housing in order to accomplish that goal. Mm. But what I do want to do is look at, you know, old garages and parking areas and gas stations and places where there are possibilities of underutilized property to do so. That is what I've always done and will continue to do into my next term.
Well, you heard it here first from Mayor London Breed. Thank you so much for joining us on State of the Bay, Mayor.
Thank you.
And that's it this week for State of the Bay. We hope you'll join us next Monday at 6 for an interview with local author Tommy Orange. And remember to subscribe to our podcast. Tonight's show was produced by Chris Nooney. It was engineered by David Kwan. And D Minor was our board operator. A replay of today's Your Call is next. Thanks for joining us. I'm Grace Wan. Good night. Thanks for listening.